I'm from Columbia University in New York City, and this work was done in part through a CDC, thank you very much, funded Youth Violence Prevention Center, which we unfortunately don't have anymore. And I would have been really sad if I had been funded and then the Senate took away my funding, but I'm just sad because we didn't get funded. I'm an epidemiologist, and but I also believe in qualitative research. And what I'm going to talk about a little bit is a qualitative study we did a couple years ago. And again, we started, there's my disclosure, nothing. We used the same model that Joe talked about, the Bronfenbrenner socio-ecological model. And is that there? No. Did you give it back to him? No, it's here. Yeah. So in this model, you have the individual and all of their attributes, the relationship to the partner, to friends and to family and to peers. And then you have a community in which they live, which includes the neighborhood, the parks, the housing, the schools, work, and religious institutions. And then society, the social and cultural aspects, the values and attitudes. And so what I'm going to talk about today essentially is the interaction between the society, the built environment, partners and peers and family. So where do we do this? We did it in Washington Heights and Inwood, which is northern Manhattan. It's largely Dominican. It has high rates of dating violence, which we established in other work, high poverty rates, low educational attainment, large immigrant, well, huge, really probably 90% of the people, high unemployment and high adolescent pregnancy. It's got a lot of problems, but it's got a lot of energy and a lot of positive spirit. So we did a screening survey in two clinics. We used the screening survey to identify people in a couple who were Latino and who were involved in a relationship in the last year, which involved some level of violence. We then did interviews, bilingual, choice of the person, whether they wanted it Spanish or English, and the study team developed the themes and the coding manual, and were interviewed. We coded them all. We looked at reliability, and I'm going to present really what we found. So we did screening on 254 18 to 24-year-old Latino men and women in heterosexual relationships. They self-administered pen and pencil in the clinic while they were in the waiting room, not if they were with a partner, only if they were alone. And 93, which is about 36%, met eligibility criteria for having had some level of violence in their relationship in the last year. We did then interviews in 20 women and 20 men in, as I said, English or Spanish, whatever their preference was. So what were our criteria? Well, they were fairly broad. So physical date, we used something called the CADRE, which is developed for adolescents and young adults in Canada by Wolf and colleagues, and it's a series of questions, I did, he did, or I did, she did. So it's symmetric. So did they throw something at them, kicked, hitting, punching, shoving, slapping, pulling hair, or was there sexual coercion involved, unwanted sexual touching, forced sex, or threats in order to get sex? So you got in if you had any of those, or if you had more than one type, or if you were afraid of your partner. And we ended up then with a very wide level of violence. Very little sexual violence actually came up in this. But so here's one quote. He was so angry I was saying really offensive things because he's never really treated me bad, but I've out of anger to get him out of his stress-free zone, I would say things that would really offend him. So I guess his way of not hitting me and getting really mad, he just hit himself. And so there was this sort of interaction of conflict sitting in the middle of that relationship, which then erupted into violence on occasion. He smacked me again. I'm not scared. Like, this is not something that I feel I don't have control over. So there was violence. The woman was not afraid. This was a woman. But it was there. It was part of the way conflict erupted into their relationship. So he got, this has been the more level, more serious level, he got mad, he ran into the room, he grabbed me around, rang me around like I was a mop, kept on pulling me down, kept on punching me, like not punching me, mugging me, throwing me, and that the whole time my friend was there to see, my son was there, my friend was there to see me getting mugged like I was nothing. And what's going to come up into the future of what I talk about is the presence of family, friends around this violence that's occurring without engagement in it. And it's something where I think we have to think about how it plays out, particularly in this environment. So I'm an epidemiologist, so we compared the people who were eligible to the rest of the clinic. We found no real differences demographically except in the length of the relationship under question. We then compared the ones we 93 who were eligible to the 40 who we interviewed, and there were no differences demographically and no real differences in the kind of relationship or the importance or the status of that relationship. So we felt we had a pretty strong sample, and this is where, as an epidemiologist, the qualitative study was enmeshed and grounded in a quantitative approach, so we could see whether we could trust it, how it played out in terms of the rest of the population. So there were 57% of the people had less than high school, about almost 60% were born in the USA, only two-thirds of them had any work at all, and the language spoken at home varied between a quarter English, 53% Spanish, and then a quarter using both at home. 55% of them lived with an older relative. And that's a really important issue. These are 18 to 24-year-olds who were still living in a family setting. Mm-hmm. Mostly they were talking about their current partner, and mostly they were long relationships. They weren't short or casual. So back here, again, what I said I'm going to be trying to talk about is what happens in the interaction between the relationship, the community, and the society values. Well, one of the things, we started out with this study trying to look at how violence developed and then how it either went up or down and over time, and actually weren't able to do that because, in fact, it simmered the whole time. So these were early conflicts which remained there and didn't get resolved. They were ongoing conflictual issues between the couple, and then they played out, and they often played out in public. So this is a young woman who said, spending time with my friends, you know, with some family because I'm hey, and he doesn't like that. I even hug my cousin, or that we play around, and I say, that's that. What's that? I keep to my side. I leave him. He's working. I tell him I'm here at John's. That's her cousin. He says, what are you doing there? I'm with my family, my son, sometimes my friends, but very little. So she was feeling this conflict between her family and being part of her family in a way that she felt good about, and he felt was inappropriate. So again, then there's a sort of, well, can you let your family in on relationship problems that came up? And so sometimes yes, also sometimes I've spoken like that. We both arrived annoyed. Sometimes I tried sometimes to talk to her family, more with her mama, and tell her about the problems that were happening. All right, so that's the way they know. It might be a little bit too forward. So she wasn't sure it was okay to do this, and yet she was in the midst of this family a lot of the time. I mean, he. So then, again, another story. This is by a woman. And so I told his mother, I said, yeah, is he a violent person? I don't think he was a violent person. He has a child. He doesn't like to hit his child, and I'm like, you need to correct him. You know, you need to let this little boy do whatever he wants. You let this little boy do whatever. I feel sometimes he's like, don't tell me how to raise my kid. His mother said, no, he's not violent. He's just like he has a big mouth. And I'm like, well, why? Did he hit you? And I told her, yeah, kind of. And she was like, what? This is not the way I raised him. It's not who he is, just because he's a family person. And so this is the situation in which the woman tried a way to engage the mother of her boyfriend in a discussion about it. Very tentative. Is it right? Is it wrong? What do you do? And no simple answers to that. But so that family, there was one I lost where there was an argument outside the front door. The mother's inside. She opens the door, pulls her son in, closes the door, locks it on the girlfriend, and then calls the police on the girlfriend. So that's an example of an unsupportive way to do this. And I lost the slide, sorry. But so then peers. Well, what happens with their peers? So often we found that the couple itself was not engaged in the middle of their peer relationships. The couple was the couple. The guy went with his friends sometimes. The girl went with her friends sometimes. They didn't actually engage together in social groups in a way that their couple was part of the social group. It was a very separate thing. And so I said, yes, how do I tell you? I'm a man. I'm outside. I have friends. And outside is important. Yeah? I have friends. I have friends, male. I'm always with my friends. We're together a lot. She calls me. She wants to know if I'm with women, if the women are with me. But they're not with me. They're with my friends. We're together, friends. For her, It was that I was with another woman, but that wasn't that. I wasn't. Whatever it was, I got home, we were arguing and fighting, whatever. She slept on her side, I slept on my side. So there was a disengagement of that couple from the people in which they spent time for fun. And it was gendered in a way, yeah? So that they both felt it strongly, males and females in our study, but there was a value judgment that women weren't supposed to go out with friends on their own. So when I was going out with my friends, that would really piss him off. Then when the violence came, he would threaten me, oh, I'm going to hit you if you go out with your friend, or don't go into that restaurant because there's a lot of guys there. He would just threaten me. And this was common, this kind of comment. So what didn't ever happen was it never came up that I'm in trouble with my boyfriend or my girlfriend, and I talked to my friends about it, and here's how they advise me. Did not come up. So it really was an absence of the support of peers in solving these problems. The other thing that's in the middle, that's in the interaction, is there was no privacy. So these young adults, 18 to 24-year-olds, there was no place to be alone that was theirs. So a lot of them lived with their family. They didn't have jobs. They were out on the street. Maybe they were at McDonald's. There was no place. And so that the violence or the controversy or conflict couldn't get worked out easily, especially in a place where your family or your peers were actually there helping you sort it out. They were actually there witnessing. So when he gets home, I throw all his stuff in the closet and I pack my stuff, and he told me I wasn't going to leave, and then we killed each other in front of his mother, in front of his brother, in front of everybody. It was like I couldn't hold it no more, you know. So again, it's this conflict playing out in the middle of a pattern of observers who happen to be family and friends but who aren't engaged in helping to support you through that process. There's not much space in Washington Heights and Inwood. There, people are living huge numbers in a single space. So then, socially, you are not supposed to argue in public. Now, this is fairly strong across all different groups, but, like, I'd never do shows in the streets. I don't do those. I would never do shows in the street. I don't do shows in front of anybody, but when we're alone, we go at it like we're going to kill each other. So there's this thing of what's acceptable behavior. I don't respect that when people in the street be arguing, like, keep that shit indoors. Nobody needs to know your business. And that was across both genders. But it spilled into the public over and over again. I started calling him names and stuff, and at the moment when you're upset, at that moment you don't realize, you don't know, you kind of black out. I didn't realize, you know, that we're outside, people are listening. People don't need to know our business, but I was saying all kind of things. He turned on around and he grabbed me, shook me. He was like, listen, you need to stop and you need to go home and you need to stop it. So I pushed him away and stuff like that, and I was upset. So this again erupted into a street situation. So this is young. One woman said, God knows what the hell they're going to do, but after my first experience of my ex-boyfriend, I tell my friends all the time when they're in the street, they have loud mouths and they want to mouth off to some guy, thinking the guy's not going to do anything. Tell them all the time, don't do that. Guys hit girls. Stop. And so this was her advice to her friends. So it's one of the only example of advice to friends, which was, don't do it, or is that five? Okay. Or else you'll get hit. But there wasn't anything in terms of the positive cues or the positive strengths for either women or men in this situation. So there was another concept, there was a social concept that doesn't translate into English very easily called casera. So casera meaning homely or home-like, home person, and it was a very positive concept. In my environment where I live in the projects, and usually females in that environment, they don't really have a good head on their shoulders, and they're always out partying. Do this and that. She was totally opposite, going to school. You never see her outside. She was at home. Very respectful, you know. She was a good girl. And a lot of guys in the neighborhood would always try to talk to her, and she would always turn them down because she's not like that. So this concept of casera at the society level as being a model which these young men felt the women should aspire to and yet didn't was a model that didn't work very clearly. So family presence here was not a presence that was really helping to problem solve in general. Occasionally it was supportive. Peers were most often a catalyst for jealousy, for suspicion rather than support. Peers were seen as a threat. And the built environment did not help because there were no private spaces. There were these young adults, there were no activities for them. There was nothing for them to really do socially except be on the street, go to McDonald's, There were not really good social engagement places. There weren't spots where they felt comfortable that wasn't either the street or McDonald's. And they had norms about who could do what where. Yeah. So what are the implications for us? Well, one is maybe to take advantage of the lack of privacy. I mean, it's sitting there. There's no jobs. There's no space. So can we engage peers and family to be more supportive to the young couples is one of the questions that we need to ask ourselves. We mostly work with younger adolescents and all and try and build a program for them. But there really isn't anything for the young adults. And I think that when we're thinking about how to do prevention, we also need to think about the broader social needs for these young people when we're looking at prevention around partner violence. That we can't separate it. It can't be separated from the family and friends, and it can't be separated from the space in which we live. So thank you.